Contemplating taste. Besides infant indoctrination and social and market pressure, there is the third factor that drives people to eat animal foods, taste. Is the smell of cooking flesh, the familiar smell of a pot roast, for example, really good, or does it trigger old childhood memories that are good? The smell may evoke our mother's kitchen and the warm feeling of the love we received through her home cooking. If our spouse wants to eat a plant-based diet and prepares a vegetable stir-fry with tempeh and baked potatoes, we may not think it smells so good because we never smelled it in our mother's kitchen. We'll resist the meal and exert social pressure on our vegetarian spouse to go back to, quote, real food. It's perhaps true, as the old saying has it, that taste cannot be disputed, but it can nevertheless be contemplated. In contemplating the taste of animal foods, several things become immediately apparent. One is that we detest eating flesh in its natural state. How ironic! Unlike plant foods, which are often delicious to us when uncooked, raw flesh is basically disgusting to us. It is virtually always cooked and carefully prepared in order to become food for us humans. Unlike the raw flesh, blood, scales, skin, bones, and organs that are gobbled up by natural omnivores and carnivores. If we had to eat natural raw flesh or no flesh, I suspect we would all become vegetarians immediately. Another thing we notice is that we don't like the flesh if it's soaked in blood, even if it's cooked. The main reason animals suffer so horribly in slaughterhouses is that they must be alive when their throats are slit so that their still beating hearts can pump the blood out of their bodies and partially dry up their flesh. If they were killed by some other means and then their corpses were cut up, the flesh would be so drenched with blood that no one would want to eat it. One fact we may not ordinarily consider is that the blood-drained and well-cooked flesh we smack our lips over is permeated with the waste products of the cells that make up the flesh. These waste products, or urea, are inseparable from the flesh and were flowing into the blood when the animal was killed to be filtered out of the blood by the kidneys and excreted as urine. In fact, what gives meat its distinctive and apparently appetizing flavor is the cooked urea in the flesh. Salty and meaty, urea gives flesh the taste we've come to associate with fine dining and good time barbecues. A fourth thing we notice about the taste of animal products is that in many ways, the more we disguise them and hide them, the more we like them. We cook flesh and eggs and add salt, pepper, seasonings, herbs, and all manner of taste enhancers and modifiers. Most cheeses involve cooking animal's milk, and without all the added salt, most cheeses would be unappetizing to most people. We add all kinds of flavorings and fruits and sugars to make cream and milk more appealing in ice cream, chocolate milk, and flavored yogurts. We bury a salted, smoked, and tenderized ground flesh patty amid sliced tomatoes, onions, lettuce, mustard, ketchup, mayonnaise, and relish. We have to ask, is it really the taste of the flesh and animal products that we enjoy so much? Or is it rather all the plant-based sauces, seasonings, condiments, and dressings that camouflage and elevate the taste of the animal products we've been pressured into eating? Besides the condiments, the hamburger is well buried in propaganda. McDonald's tells our children it comes from a, quote, burger patch. When cooked and properly camouflaged, animal flesh, eggs, and milk products all have one taste factor going for them. They are high in saturated fat. We humans seem to easily develop cravings for fatty, creamy, greasy foods, and animal foods tend to fulfill these taste cravings, though plant-based foods can certainly be prepared in fatty, creamy ways if we should so desire, and without any of the toxic cholesterol of animal foods. Because the cooked fat and urea combination cannot be exactly replicated by plant foods, there are certainly tastes and textures in animal foods that aren't precisely duplicated by plant foods, but many of the more recent meat analogs come amazingly close. However, most people who were raised as omnivores and have switched to a plant-based diet for at least a year or two find nothing at all attractive about the taste or texture of animal foods. From my experience, they do not crave it at all, but find it increasingly revolting. According to Neil Bernard, MD, quote, "One of the most surprising discoveries in the science of appetite is that tastes require maintenance," end quote. Since our taste cells turn over about every 3 weeks, he points out that 2 or 3 weeks is all it takes for our taste cells to forget the taste of animal foods, and that this will eliminate most of our craving for them because the new taste cells will be accustomed only to the tastes of plant-based foods. The craving we have for animal foods is conditioned and maintained by repetition, and our typical diet, high in animal fat, animal protein, and cholesterol, is fundamentally toxic to our physiology. But the elimination of cravings may not be so simple. As Neil Bernard discusses in Breaking the Food Seduction, a growing body of research is demonstrating that meat and especially cheese are physically addicting. When digested, cheese releases opiates called casomorphines, as well as an amphetamine-like chemical called phenylethylamine, also found in sausage. Ham, salami, tuna, and other meats also appear to be addicting because opiate-blocking drugs reduce people's desire for them. Besides whatever physical addiction there may be, a lot of craving for animal foods seems to be mental and emotional. The smell of the pot roast cooking conjures up mom insecurity and self-image. Eating food is a lot like sex in that the inner images and attitudes we have are more important to our enjoyment than the physical or objective reality of which or of whom we partake. Our taste is determined ultimately by our mind. I've found personally that my taste appreciation for foods has grown enormously since I began eating a plant-based diet 30 years ago. And as the years go by, the flavors are richer, more infinitely varied, and ever more delicious. Most vegans I've talked with find this to be true for them as well. There are probably two main reasons for this. One is that plant-based foods tend to be subtler in their tastes than animal-based foods. As we discussed, animal foods are salty from urea and added salt, and they are usually dressed with strong-tasting tenderizers, sauces, condiments, and flavor enhancers. Our sense of taste may become somewhat numbed by the strong flavors, so in the beginning, a plant-based diet often seems bland. In a few weeks, though, as our taste buds turn over and become more sensitive because they aren't being chronically overwhelmed by the strong artificial flavors added to animal foods, we become more sensitive to the delicate flavors of vegetables, grains, legumes, and fruits, and all the endless ways of preparing and combining them. New taste vistas unfold endlessly. The other reason plant-based foods taste better is that we feel better eating them and contemplating their origins. Eating slowly, we enjoy contemplating the organic orchards and gardens that supply the delicious vegetables, fruits, and grains we're eating. We go to appreciate the nearly miraculous beauty of cabbages and cauliflower, the fragrance of roasted sesame seeds, sliced oranges, chopped cilantro, and baked kabocha squash, and the wondrous textures of avocado, persimmon, steamed quinoa, and sautéed tempeh. We are grateful for the connection we feel with the earth, the clouds, the nurturing gardeners, and the seasons. And the tastes are delicious gifts we naturally enjoy opening to, as we would open to our beloved in making love and appreciating the beloved fully. In contrast, eating animal foods is often done quickly, without feeling deeply into the source of the food, for who would want to contemplate the utter hells that produce our factory-farmed fish, chicken, eggs, cheese, steaks, bacon, hot dogs, or burgers? Feeling guilty, we just take the life force without really opening to it, as if we were having sex with a prostitute, refusing to acknowledge that she is a unique and precious being, and distancing ourselves from her suffering. Just the pleasure, please. Anything more would spoil our fun. Actually, the taste we prize in animal foods is more like the sex we would have as rapists, for the prostitute may at least consent and profit from our cravings, but the animal is always forced against her will to be tortured and killed for our taste and questionable pleasure. When we contemplate our tastes, we can see how conditioned they actually are. More importantly, though, we can see how utterly unsupportable they are as reasons to commit violence against defenseless feeling beings. Self-centered craving for pleasure and fulfillment at the expense of others is the antithesis of the golden rule and of every standard of morality. We know it is unacceptable to knowingly harm sentient creatures simply to satisfy our personal taste. If we see a man whose umbrella we find attractive, we know it's wrong to attack or kill the man and steal the umbrella just because our taste desires to have it. Or if we see a woman whose body we find attractive, we know it's wrong to hit her and rape her just because we may desire to do so. These actions are wrong because they cause suffering to others and violate their sacred integrity for purely selfish reasons. We also know that we must face social and legal consequences if we commit such acts. However, if we desire to eat the flesh or milk or eggs of an animal because we like how it tastes, and this means killing, beating, raping, confining, stealing from, and in other ways hurting the animal and violating her sacred integrity, we are fully encouraged to do so. The social consequences of harming animals for food are all positive. Since our culture denies animals used for food any inherent value in their own right, limiting their worth simply to their value as commodities to those who own them, animals have no protection. Ordering a steak earns us approving nods, and our friends rave over the barbecued ribs at the office picnic. The actual confinement, raping, mutilating, and killing are kept carefully hidden as shameful secrets that would make us profoundly uncomfortable if we had to witness them or, worse, perform them ourselves. 200 years ago in the South, a slave could certainly be beaten, stolen from, confined, raped, mutilated, and killed by the master or his overseer with no feelings of compunction. Such behavior was encouraged by the culture and the upbringing of the dominating class. This upbringing dulled natural human feelings of compassion, connectedness, and justice, inhibited people's intelligence, and allowed them to act brutally without a sense of remorse. Deep down, though, they certainly knew better, just as we know better today when we order a cheese omelet with bacon because we like the taste. Though our natural intelligence knows this is a profoundly immoral act, our knowing is suppressed and our hearts are hardened against the misery that a chicken, a cow, and a pig endured to satisfy our passing and conditioned taste pleasure. We prefer not to know and are comfortable in knowing that no one, not the waitress, nor our friends, nor the media, will in any way remind us of the enormous animal misery necessitated by our demand. The animals suffer out of sight, and their cries are unheeded by us. They have no voice as long as we refuse to listen to our hearts. Defending the fortress. We can see that the three reasons that we eat animal foods, infant indoctrination, social and market pressure, and taste, reinforce each other and create a force field around our food choices that, like a sturdy fortress, resists any incursions. The walls are up, and they're well fortified. Yet the fortress may not be as strong as it looks. For one thing, it confines us and inhibits our natural urge to fulfill a higher potential and to evolve spiritually. For another, it is not founded upon the truth of our basic nature, which is kindness, nor on the sense of interconnectedness with other living beings, and it militates against our ability to awaken wisdom and live in freedom together. At the core of our being, we yearn to reach higher in our understanding and to live in peace and harmony on this earth. The walls of the fortress are built of cruelty, denial, ignorance, force, conditioning, and selfishness. Most importantly, they are not of our choosing. They have been and are being forced upon us. Our well-being and our survival depend upon our seeing this clearly and throwing off our chains of domination and unawareness. By harming and exploiting billions of animals, we confine ourselves spiritually, morally, emotionally, and cognitively, and blind ourselves to the poignant, heart-touching beauty of nature, animals, and each other. To be free, we must practice freeing others. To feel loved, we must practice loving others. To have true self-respect, we must respect others. The animals and other voiceless beings, the starving humans and future generations, are pleading with us to see. It's all on our plate.